Ladies and gentlemen, I've just had a lesson in how to pronounce this man's name, and unfortunately, I can't say it. I've tried to do it. It's a French-sounding Dutch. So I'm gonna call him the Maestro and let him introduce himself. Maestro, tell everybody who you are.
Hello. What an introduction. Yes, I am André Rieu.
And that I can't say. And I've been rehearsing for 10 minutes. Thank you, first of all, so much for talking to me. We have got the pleasure of you back in Liverpool on the 20th of December. I am so excited.
Me too. I'm extremely excited. You know, all the concerts in the UK are so fantastic. That I tell you a story. We came last year. We performed an aria by Puccini. Very sad, dramatic story. And I tell the people, so it's about a geisha who fell in love with an American sea captain. Oh, the whole audience. So it started. Then, and I, very shortly after the marriage, he left her. Oh, so it went on and went. And I said, yes, but it's a sad story. So it's such a pleasure to perform in the UK.
Well, I think it's the greatest Christmas present for those people, if there is anybody out there that have never seen this man. And it is a piece of history. What I find with you, sir, is, and it is remarkable, and you're a very modest man, I know that, but you have made musical history. You have broken records. You have broken box office. You have kept an orchestra together, which is very difficult in itself because musicians are...
say it.
As an entertainer myself, as well as a broadcaster, I've worked with live bands over the years, and they're quite unique. They're quite unique. So for you to make a piece of musical history for a start and then to keep the largest private orchestra together, you must be an exceptional man.
You know, when you see me in front of the orchestra, I'm a dictator. No, not at all. No, I'm not a dictator. I think I'm a conductor. Of course, I'm the boss. They know that very well. And, you know, when we perform and the third double bass player made a mistake, I hear it. And the only thing I have to do is look at him and he will never do it again. Yep. So that's the way you have to do it. When you don't hear the things, don't go in front of an orchestra.
It's interesting you say that because what just jumped into my mind then, James Brown used to fine his musicians if they got the dance steps wrong.
Uh-huh.
So maybe you should start fining them. You make a few bob.
No, I only look at them.
All right.
That's enough.
Why do you think your orchestra has stayed with you the way it has?
You should ask them, of course. But I think it's a huge pleasure to play with a bunch of friends on stage. Most of the orchestra are with me now for more than 25 years. I can tell you, making music in that way is better than sex. It's really, it's so rewarding. We only look at each other and they know, he wants a little bit faster, he wants it slower, this audience is different, so we change the program. That is fantastic.
André, you are a very generous man on stage and you give and let other people have their personality. There are some amazing people in your orchestra that have got a great sense of timing, which you have as a comic. I mean, you would make a brilliant comic, I promise you faithfully. You allow them, though, to be themselves, don't you?
I think that's very important. We played in LA, and David Foster, one of the great producers in America, he was in the concert. And he came to me afterward and said, I learned tonight a lot. You know how to step back and give the others their light. And therefore, you are the first. And in fact, that is what I do, you know. I am the glue in between of all these talents. And I think the art for a good conductor is to let the musicians play and let them play better than they think they could ever play.
I think that's a lovely statement because you get the best out of people by letting them be themselves.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
When you first started, did you ever, in your wildest dreams, think you would finish up where you are today?
No. I always believed in myself, certainly after my wife came into my life, because she was the first that believed in myself. My youth was not so happy. My parents didn't believe in me. But then Marjorie came. She believed in me. And then, you know, I opened up and I started to believe in myself. And then the whole thing started. But of course, I could never imagine that it would end in Liverpool.
Well, I just think every time I talk about you and talk about your concerts, the thing that makes me laugh, and it makes me roar with laughter, is that you've got mature people wearing scarves with your name on. I've seen that with Bay City Rollers, the Beatles, never with somebody of your position.
I know. You know, we play here in Maastricht every summer on the big square, and a lot of UK people come. And when you see there how they are dressed up, it's really, we are in the studio here editing their specials, and it's really fantastic how they come to the concerts. And they are proud to show them, you know.
Absolutely.
They come from England. You have to see that. And it's so nice to see that.
The other thing which is wonderful, in a concert of the sizes that you have, which are huge, you've always got security telling people to sit down, please stop using the cameras, sit down. You play a waltz and the whole world gets up.
Yes. The first thing my people tell the people of the hall, wherever we play in the world, please let the people stand up, let the people do what they want. That's what Andre want. He want his interaction with the people. He want the people feel at home. So then sometimes the people of the hall don't listen and they please sit down. But in my concert, they can do whatever they want. They can cry, they can dance, they can sing, they can scream for more. And you know what? I even saw several times people in a wheelchair, and during the encore, they stood up and danced.
Wow.
I mean, that is really fantastic to see.
I'm talking to Andre, who is coming on the 20th of December to the Liverpool Echo Arena. It's a happening. It's hard to describe what you do.
Yeah, it is a happening. I think that's the best word. You know, what I like and to build up the atmosphere, you know, 1 hour before the break, then after the break, another hour, and then the encores, you know, and then there's the explosion. And that's what I like.
Now, you've got 110 people, apparently, on the payroll and the biggest private orchestra in the world. It is a complete business, isn't it? It's a complete company.
It is, yeah. And another 100 people who work for me freelance. So it's a huge responsibility. But I can tell you, Marjorie and me, we like that. It's not a burden. It's a privilege that we really can that all these people trust us, and they know what Marjorie and Andre decide is right, and we follow them. And I can tell you, of course, it's a huge organization. And in the beginning, we started to do that. You see the golden chairs on the on stage. The first I bought together with Marjorie here in the neighborhood. I went to the market to buy some cotton to put on the
seats.
Yeah. And I did it with my own hands. But now, of course, we have a lot of people to do that for us. But we still are in control.
I've been a working comic as well as a broadcaster for 50 years. And when you're on stage and you're doing a gag, you get a feel. But even now, today, after all these years, I can still see a different style of a gag or a different... Does it happen to you? Because it is important, your personality and the eyebrows. Oh, I'm sorry. The eyebrows, when they go up. That makes me roar with laughter. So do you find when you're on stage, you've done a line, but you've done it differently, and you think, that works better?
I tell you that every night is different. Before I go on stage, the last 5 minutes, nobody can speak to me. I'm extremely nervous. And because I build up the tension, because I don't know the audience, you know. We know what we do on stage, but we don't know the audience. And because we travel the world to build up this interaction with the audience worldwide, that's what we don't know. So, and therefore I'm so nervous. But the moment I come on stage, I see all these faces, then it's done. But I feel, You know, we walk through the audience from back to the stage, and during that applause, I hear and I feel how the evening is going to be.
It also puts them in a wonderful state of mind. It's a very clever entrance. If I analysed every part of what you do, you are a very, very shrewd, clever man. Not only talented as a musician, but as a businessman, you tick every box.
I don't know. When I would be a real businessman, I would sell pipelines or something like that. You know, it's a very expensive hobby I have. 110 people on my payroll. So I don't complain, but really, really rich, like people who are on the stock market or in the buildings, how do you say that? The real estate. Yeah. Like Mr. Trump, they are rich. So yes, I don't complain, but it's it's an expensive hobby.
But you know, Andre, they couldn't do your job.
You're right.
I promise you could do theirs. They couldn't do yours. I've got to ask the unthinkable question. Have you ever had a bad night on stage? Ever?
No.
Oh, no. Come into my world as a comic. I'll show you a bad night.
No, it was always, even when we started, you know, it was always like a flow. It always worked.
Yeah. Tell me about the castle you live in.
What do you want to hear? It's built, so technically it's built of the worst material you can find in the world to build something. They find it here in the neighborhood, and it's a very soft stone. Yeah. So I like to renovate, and when I finished the front side and I start to do the other side, I have to redo the front side. But it's what I like, you know. It's a very romantic castle. Why don't you come and visit
I would love to, but I asked for a reason, because I read about the Musketeer. D'Artagnan had his last breakfast there. Now, the reason I mention that is I have just, only 6 months ago, been made a Musketeer. There is an organization in France that was started by his great-great-grandfather, and I am now a Musketeer.
You are a musketeer?
I'm a musketeer. I was in Singapore working, and my friend Patrick Fiat has the club over there.
Yeah.
And he said, we would like you to join. And they made me a musketeer, and I have the medal. I haven't got the hat yet, because you
and
get the
sword?
Hat when you're an officer. Haven't got the sword, because you have to be an officer to get the sword. But when I read this, I went, oh, that's where D'Artagnan had his last breakfast, and I'm a musketeer.
Okay.
So when I come over, I'll have to wear the medal.
And? The hat.
And the hat, if I ever get the hat.
Sword.
And the sword. No, I think that's illegal to walk with a sword.
Not in the castle.
Oh, right, of course. Because you own the castle. So that's fine.
Exactly.
That's easy.
I love you.
Yeah. Is there any piece of music you would never play?
I tell you, I play only music that touches my heart. I tell the people every night, how do you make your programs? The people ask me. And I say, only with my heart. And every night there is an applause when they hear this, because that is all about music. Yeah. Music is only music when you play it with your heart. So that's the answer to your question.
The festivals you have in your country and in Vienna, did they start small and have grown into the size they are now?
Yeah. We started, I started with a 5-piece orchestra. And, you know, my father was a conductor, a classical conductor, and he educated us all to be classical musicians. So I went to the conservatory. And then, you know, I have a sunny character. So I thought, you know, this classical world, my colleagues only spoke about the union and it's too cold and too hot. And when is the next vacation? We want more money. And nobody spoke about music. So my wife saw me unhappier and unhappier, and she said, you know, I'm a teacher at the university. I'll earn the money for you and you follow your dream. And my dream was to have an own orchestra, and that's what we did.
Wow. There is a terrible snobbery in music. You have, I'm delighted to say, broken down that barrier.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And the great joy on stage is to use humor. You know, humor in life is the most beautiful thing. No, the most beautiful thing is music, but then humor. And, you know, it's so fantastic to use humor every second of your life. And that's in classical music as if it's forbidden. I don't know why.
What I love also about it is your marriage. You are so proud of your wife and so much in love. And let's face it, you can be the richest man in the world. Without somebody to share it with, it's quite empty.
Yeah. And that's not only my wife. Of course, I love her above all in the world, and my children and grandchildren. But to make music together with this bunch of friends, I can tell you that's so beautiful. Making music together, singing together, it's scientifically proven. It makes happy.
I was 12 years old. I got my mother's knitting needle and conducted to Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto. I thought I was going to be a conductor. I had no idea. For those people that are listening now who actually don't know what a conductor does, what does a conductor do?
I think, first of all, he has to have the technique, of course, that he knows in his head what he wants to hear. And he must be able to tell his musician how they must do that. And I think that's the most important thing. Let them play. But they must feel that you know exactly what you want. When you follow them, then they lose interest. No, you have always to be the boss and say, oh, it's so beautiful what you play, but could you try to do this or that? And then they feel that you have something in your head that you want to hear. And that's what I experience in my studio when we make a new record or we rehearse. We start a piece and, you know, the orchestra thinks, I see it on their face, oh my God, what is this? This is a shit piece. And then I go on and I go on and I go on. And then suddenly they start to feel what I mean. And then the smile comes on their face and that was the secret. So, and that's so nice to feel that my conception of the piece, I try to tell them and I convince them that they have to do it in that way. And then everybody is happy.
The other thing about having an orchestra as big as you have is it is their families, their baggage, their lives. Yeah. It's like a television show, isn't it? Every day.
No, I think also when you ask me about a conductor, he has also to be, how do you know that? How do you say that? A psychiatrist.
Right.
No, not a psychiatrist, but a psychologist.
Oh, psychologist.
So you have to understand people only by looking at them. And that is also very important. You know, it's a people business. It's not a computer.
The amazing thing about you as well, Andre, is that nobody else is doing what you're doing. Nobody in the world is doing and has captured a market or found a product through this beautiful music and this incredible experience. No one's doing it but you.
Nobody is so stupid as me. That's the reason. Who in the world would do that? My goodness.
Would you ever retire?
No, never.
Never?
No, never. I have a personal trainer. 3 times a week he comes to my home and he kills me with his things. And every time after the sport, I feel, wow, that is good. So I do everything to be in a good shape.
Got to ask, have you ever had short hair?
No, never. I was born like this.
Yeah.
I was born like this. First my hair came and then a meter hair and then I came.
Now, people like you have got fan clubs. People like you have people that adore you. But your fans, they go an extra mile, don't they?
Yes, it's true. It's incredible to hear where people come from. And so when we play in the UK, they come from all over the place. And it's incredible, you know, the classical concerts. I remember that at 30 kilometers. Oh, my God, you came from that far. But in my case, they fly all over the world. Here in Maastricht, when we play in summer, last year we had 80 nationalities. Wow. 80. So they really come from the Fiji, from everywhere.
Is there any countries you won't play?
Yes, of course. Countries with the, I tell you, we gave two concerts, no, three concerts in a row in Turkey, 4 years ago. Then, and 2 years later, another two concerts. And then the thing started with Erdogan and his press, and he don't allow people to say what they want. I don't go there anymore.
Simple as that. Simple as
Yeah.
that. Do you play China ever?
China,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah.
How do they react to you in China?
Oh, it's different. You know, I played in Japan several times, and the first time we played in Japan, I thought, oh my God, it's not going to work here. You know, Japanese,
Yeah.
and then, you know, we played the Radetzky March, that's
Yeah.
the start of the encore, and then balloons come down. And that moment, all the Japanese audience went crazy, and you know, as if they turned a button, and they went completely crazy and said, oh my God, how luckily they love it. And China, they are more open as the Japanese. So it was really very, very nice to play there. And we go back in March or
Yeah.
April. Yeah,
Do you have
something
much
like that.
time at home, or is it always touring?
No, we have a rhythm. You know, we have a lot of young mothers in the orchestra with babies, and they want to give milk when they come home. So we have a rhythm of 2 weeks, 2 weeks maximum. 2 weeks on tour. Now we already next week we go to the US, so we do 2 weeks US and then we come back.
And coming to Liverpool on the 20th of December at the Echo Arena. The hardest question ever. Do you have one piece of music that is the most special?
Yes, I
Oh.
can answer you.
Oh, wow. I'm
I
impressed.
can answer you. It's the Danube. Yeah, it's such a masterpiece. It's such a masterpiece. It's incredible how Mr. Strauss composed this, and it's not for nothing that Mr. Brahms said, oh, what a pity that I didn't compose that. It's really
Yeah.
fantastic.
Do you write music?
Yeah, but you know, I'm not Mozart. Mozart wrote music while he was doing all sort of other things, and he was a genius, and I have to sit down and think and compose and tear it apart and start over again. And but yes, every now and then when I have inspiration, I write it down and I compose.
Are you going for the Guinness Book of Records for the amount of CDs and DVDs you're making and selling?
I don't know. We have to ask the Guinness Book of Record people. I don't know.
I think you're getting near to it.
I know that I, somebody of the record company counted, I had 500 platinum records, and they thought that I was the only one who had that.
That's amazing. Because anybody gets a platinum, they usually hang it in the toilet, but 500 wouldn't fit in your toilet.
I have a large
Oh,
toilet, but not
yeah.
as large as that.
I cannot thank you enough for speaking to me. I've wanted to do this interview for so, so long. What's your message to the fans out there, the people that love you so much, who'll be listening right now?
I think the message could be when you would come to the concert, then open your heart to our music. And I promise them that I will open my heart, my orchestra will open their heart, and like that, we will have an evening we will never forget.
20th of December, you're at the Echo Arena. Do we have any Christmas carols?
Of course.
Good. Do we have Father Christmas?
Father Christmas, who knows? Who knows?
Maestro Andrea Rio, thank you so much for talking to me.
It was a real pleasure to talk to you. I would love to that every interview is like this.